This morning Giriraj looks so beautiful, so pleased. If you could sit yourself in such a way that you can also sometimes see Giriraj, because we're so fortunate to be here in his presence. So first let's have a, to bring us all here, everyone please take out your pens and your notebooks and just start writing about anything you like. I can't speak if it's right in front of my eyes. We spoke of a metaphor, an example, to help us understand what we're going to be doing at this retreat. Well, really, not only at the retreat, in our life, the purpose of life. We've taken a look at a very, very, very high mountain. And practically speaking, this highest of mountains is what the soul, each and every one of us, is capable of expanding our consciousness to. And of course, at the top of this highest of high mountains, we've gotten a glimpse, or we hope to get a glimpse, of our natural, eternal relationship with Krishna. As Mahaprabhu said, prema pamarto mahan. If we can get a glimpse of this, then nothing in the material world will satisfy us. If we don't get a glimpse of this, of the land of Vrindavan, then we've gotten a glimpse, or we hope to get a glimpse, of our natural, eternal relationship with Krishna. As Mahaprabhu said, prema pamarto mahan. If we can get a glimpse of this, then nothing in the material world will satisfy us. If we don't get a glimpse of this, of the land of Vrindavan, then instead of being pulled there, which is inevitable, if we catch this glimpse, we will be forced by the strength of material nature to act again and again and again and again, seeking pleasure in the material world. It is inevitable because we are each and every one of us are pleasure seeking. We desire this. We require this. So it is very important to glimpse the spiritual world. And now we will hear, if technology works, we will hear Prabhupada giving us such a glimpse of the spiritual world. Adi?
Yes.
Maybe you can hand out the first of the sheets. Yes. Maybe give one to the a bunch to the Mataji side. This is a lecture that Prabhupada, or part of a lecture segment that Prabhupada gave on the Bhagavatam, on the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj, calling Lord Nrisimhadev, practically speaking, to appear. And this lecture was given by Prabhupada on, in San Francisco in the very early days of the movement in 1968. Now, if you don't have one, are there enough to go around? If you don't have one, raise your hand. Whoops. Okay, they're still coming. But please share if you... Prabhupada in this lecture will explain very much our predicament in the beginning, our dissatisfaction in this world, and then gradually how to get satisfaction. Okay, ready?
And it is crying. If somebody gets the child, he is not satisfied because he cannot express that I want my mother.
Okay, does everyone have the place? Right in the beginning, the last thing Prabhupada said was, I want my mother. And the first thing, if someone takes the child, he's not satisfied because he cannot express that I want my mother.
Similarly, we are hankering after loving Krishna in a perverted way. But because we have no information of Krishna, we have forgotten our relationship with Krishna. Therefore, we are loving this body, that body. Ultimately, I am loving a cat or dog or something. The love is there. But we have misplaced the love. As soon as we replace our love to Krishna, then our perfection of love is manifested and our perfection of life is also achieved. Lord Chaitanya preached this philosophy, the prema pumartham ha. Prema, prema means love. His philosophy, Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is Aradha Bhagavan Vrajasutanaya. Vrajasutanaya means Krishna. Krishna appeared as the son of the king of Vrindavan. Therefore, and Tanaya means son. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is propagation, is teaching. The substance of his teaching is that Krishna is the most worshipable object. Aradha Bhagavan Vrajasutanaya. Tadhyamam Vrindavanam. And as he is worshipable, similarly, he is yes, the Vrindavan, where he appears, that is also worshipable. Aradha Bhagavan Vrajasutanaya. Tadhyamam Vrindavanam. Ramya Kachi Upasana Vajavadu Vija Kulpita. And the method of worship, the best method of worship of Krishna was exhibited by the gopis. Now, what was the worshipable method of gopis? The gopis, they are not very learned scholars or Vedantists. Or theosophists or mental speculators, not. They are ordinary village girls. And that also not coming of a very high royal family or Brahmin family. They were cow herdsmen. So their fathers were not very rich, but they had several cows, that's all. So the gopis, method of Krishna worship was that they could not forget Krishna even for a moment. That was their quality. There are many verses about the mental situation of the gopis. I shall try to explain you about their mentality, how they are loving Krishna. Krishna used to take his cows to the forest for pasture. And the gopis, when Krishna is away from the village, the gopis were thinking, oh, Krishna food. He's so soft, and he's walking barefooted on the stones, and chips of stones, and they are picking his food. How much he is suffering. In this way, they are thinking and crying. Krishna is away from the village and is walking in the forest, and the gopis are thinking at home that how much troublesome the walking is that he has gone out. In this way there are so many. While they are at home, while they are cooking, or they are feeding their children, always they are thinking of Krishna. That was their quality. They were so much absorbed in thought of Krishna that not a single moment were without Krishna consciousness. So therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that Ramya Kasid Upasana Vajradhu Bhargavi Jagavichita. There is no better method of worship than it was conceived by the gopis. And what was that? The gopis, 24 hours were always Krishna consciousness. They were requesting Krishna, "My dear Krishna, many, many yogis, many, many saintly persons, they go to the forest and meditate upon your lotus feet, but they cannot fix up. They cannot fix up. They meditate, your lotus feet, but they think of something else, they are not perfect. Their meditation fails. But in our case, your lotus feet is so much fixed up in our heart that we are thinking of you and we cannot discharge our family duties. So kindly get out of our heart. That's it. Please excuse, kindly go out of our heart so that we can do our duty." That was their prayer. Therefore, that is Krishna consciousness, ideal Krishna consciousness. You have to mold your life in such a way that you cannot think of Krishna. You cannot think but Krishna only. The gopis were doing their duties, their housewives, girls, they had their husband, children. But in spite of all these things, they were thinking of Krishna. But this is the instruction in the Bhagavad Gita. Manvana bhavamad bhaktam madhyaji mang namaskuru. Krishna says that always be thinking of me in your mind. Manvana. Mana means my. Manmana bhavamad bhakta, and become my devotee. Don't think me as your enemy. Sometimes Krishna is thought of as enemy. That kind of thought is useless. Not useless. Of course, the enemies who thought of Krishna always, they also got salvation. Because they, after all, they thought of Krishna. But not in that way. Krishna says, Manmana bhava mad bhakta, just becoming my lover and devotee. Manmana bhava mad bhakta madhyaji, just worship me. Madhyaji mang namaskuru, and offer your obeisances unto me. In this way, mam eva ishyasi, you will come back to me. Asamshaya, without any doubt. So this is the benefit of Krishna consciousness. And Prahlad Maharaj is teaching that in this human form of life, especially from childhood, people should be taught God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, somehow or other. Then their life will be successful, and don't spoil your life otherwise. This is the instruction they have begun, and we shall continue it. If you please come, we shall talk. If any question is there, you can say.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Please take 5 minutes now and again write. But write which defines what this specific class is about. Desire is yearning to attain mountain heights. Capacity, ability to climb. Without desire, why brave the steep ascent? And without capacity, who has reached a lofty peak? Two things, desire and capacity. When we put these together, they will give birth to something else. But we'll speak about that something else in a moment. Now, let us speak about desire a little more. To be in Vrindavan, to be in touch with the dust of Vrindavan, especially to be hearing and chanting in the association of, as we heard yesterday, very pure and sincere souls sitting at the lotus feet of Giriraj, who is the great soul who can fulfill our desires, and hearing Prabhupada's words describing the gopis of Vrindavan and the intensity of their desire, that they couldn't think of anything but Krishna. When Krishna instructed the gopis to fix him in their minds by meditation, they laughed, as Prabhupada said. Our problem, they said, is not that we can't fix you in our mind. Our problem is we can't get you out of our minds. Why are you telling us this mystic yoga instruction? Don't you realize our love for you? Of course, what doesn't Krishna realize? But so many of the things that we will hear that are in the Bhagavatam are Krishna's pulling. He's pulling the love of the residents of Vrindavan out from the deep recesses of the core of their hearts so it comes out their mouths so that we can hear it and understand what love actually is, to understand what Krishna consciousness actually is. When we hear from the attachment of the gopis for Krishna's flute, we will hear the acharyas comment on this point, that Krishna, by playing his flute, he's pulling the love of the gopis from their hearts. So we have an opportunity to hear of that and glimpse their ecstasy. And even getting a glimpse of that ecstasy, as we will get for sure sitting so close to Giriraj and Sri Vrindavan Dham, that will ruin one's material life. And that is what we want. A ruined material life. Not that a devotee can't be extremely successful materially, but no material life. Material life means what? It means death. It means birth. Repeatedly, continuously. And spiritual life to its perfection, on the other hand, means being immersed in the ocean, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of ecstatic love for Krishna. We want to develop a desire in the heart. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur once defined the Bhakti Lata Bija, the seed of devotion, as ruchi, or taste, or shraddha, Prabhupada said it was taste, actually, in the third canto. Or Bhaktivinoda Thakur said it was Shraddha, faith, that yes, this is actually for me. This is mine. I'm not of this world. But knowing that I am not of this world, it doesn't actually get us out of this world. And we'll hear about this tomorrow. It is not in and of itself sufficient. We need some desire planted in the heart. A taste, a higher taste. Otherwise, where is the impetus to climb the mountain? Spiritual life, when we first join, we begin chanting, we have flowers in between our ears, and we're thinking everything's going to be honey and roses without thorns. But gradually we find out that it is difficult, and the main difficulty is what? It's not everyone else. The main difficulty is my own mind. This is the great struggle in spiritual life. Placing the mind at the lotus feet of Krishna, full surrender. But there is no prolonged impetus unless there is an ever-increasing desire and a feeling of climbing that mountain. Yes, I am getting closer. I don't know if any of you have been in the Himalayas. Raise your hand if you've been in the Himalayas or to Badrinath. Yes. Yes. No, yes. Some, yes. These mountains are so incredible because you see them. You see something that looks a hill that seems sort of close, and you go walking up into this and then you're walking and walking and walking and walking, and hours later, you're still walking. It's so huge and so far away that after all that endeavor, it seems still further away. In the romance of the beginning of the journey, oh, I'll get there so easily. Flowers and honey, it's all sweet. But to sustain Krishna consciousness, the endeavor, this long climb, I heard Prabhupada say on a tape just the other day, it is not easy, it is difficult. Sometimes he says it's very, very easy, so we will begin. But after we have been climbing a while, we understand it's not only me who's having difficulty, it's actually a great journey. It's a great journey, it's high. We are aiming for the topmost peak of consciousness, the full manifestation of the soul's relationship with Krishna in the most intimate form of love. We need desire, and that desire to love and serve Krishna, it really must be increasing. So let us talk a little about desire. Not exactly talk about it, but let's hear something about Krishna. Prashanta Mataji, maybe you can move a little bit this way, please. These are just, we'll read 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 verses from the Brahma Samhita, the fifth chapter of the Brahma Samhita. Now, when Lord Chaitanya went traveling south, he picked up two books, and he brought them back. Who did he give them to? Do you know? I knew just a few days ago, but I've forgotten. He gave them to one devotee in Puri, to
Vasudev Datta.
Yes, Vasudev Datta, who copied them, and then all the devotees copied them. Of all the books, this is one we're going to hear some verses of that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thought so much of, he wanted all his devotees to have it. The verses that we've chosen, they are meditative. Please meditate upon Giriraj, and please listen. Yes, I'll read English. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Godhead. He has an eternal, blissful spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, and he is the prime cause of all causes. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the first progenitor who is tending the cows, who yield all desires in abodes built with spiritual gems, surrounded by millions of purpose trees, and always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis or gopis. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is adept in playing on his flute. With blooming eyes like lotus petals, with head bedecked with peacock feather, the figure of beauty tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and his unique loveliness charming millions of cupids. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, round whose neck is swinging a garland of flowers beautified with the moon locket, whose two hands are adorned with the flute and jeweled ornaments, who always revels in pastimes of love, whose graceful threefold bending form of Shyamasundar is eternally manifest. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is Shyamasundar, Krishna himself with inconceivable innumerable attributes, whom the pure devotees see in their hearts of hearts with the eye of devotion tinged with the salve of love. The highest devotion is attained by slow degrees, by the method of constant endeavor for self-realization, with the help of scriptural evidence, theistic conduct, and perseverance in practice. When one attains deep, deep attraction for Krishna, let us hear
Sachi Devi,
more music accompaniment and more meditation. This is from, I read this either last year or the year before, but it's so striking, by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur from Madhurya Kadambini. Describing very advanced states of love for Krishna.
Want to play also? That was, yeah. You can start with a little high picture and then I'll begin.
Now listen to how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes very exalted states of consciousness of a devotee. This is bhava bhakti moving to prem. Attaining the power to taste all of the Lord's qualities, such as his beauty and fragrance, and tasting each one, the devotee ascends to higher and higher peaks of astonishing experience, and his heart melts on incessant realization of the Lord's unprecedented affection for his devotee. Then, the Lord, displaying his wonderful nature, says, "O best of devotees, many births you have given up wife, house, and wealth for my sake, and out of obligation to serve me, you have endured the miseries of cold, wind, hunger, thirst, and pain, and you have tolerated the contempt of other men, you have taken to a life of begging, and in payment for all your sacrifice, I cannot give you anything. I have become indebted to you. Since lordship over the whole earth, taking the post of a demigod, and acquisition of mystic powers are unsuitable for you, how can I give them to you? One cannot give grass and straw, the enjoyment of cows, to any human being. Though I am unconquerable, I have just now been conquered by you. I live for you and dance for you. I am hanging on to the creeper of your good qualities for support. Hearing the sweet and affectionate words of the Lord, the devotee says, O Lord, Master, Ocean of Mercy, you glanced on me while I was being bitten by an array of crocodiles. I was in the misery of infinite births and deaths amidst the terrifying current of material existence. Lord, original spiritual master, destroyer of ignorance in the form of such qualities as lust, by manifesting the Sudarshan chakra of your wonderful form, you have pierced those crocodiles and freed me from the clutches of their teeth. To fulfill my desire to serve your lotus feet, you placed the process of constant hearing, chanting, and remembering your qualities and name, and you made me understand how to perform service to yourself through the association of your devotees. I am unintelligent, the lowest of the low, not even one day have I done service for you. Such a miserly, selfish person deserves to be punished. Contrary to this, however, showing your very self to me, you have made me drink nectar. You have mortified me by saying that you have become my debtor, and now I'm thinking what to do. It would be presumptuous to ask you to pardon all my offenses, 5, 7, 8, 1,000, or 1,000,000 offenses. I cannot say how many there were, but I can indefinitely say it must be more than 100,000,000,000,000. O Lord, let all the fruits of my past activities, received and yet to be received. Previously I've compared your dark limbs to a monsoon cloud, to a blue water lily, and to the sapphire. I compared your effulgent face to the moon, and your tender feet to newly sprouted leaves. And now, these analogies seem like a burnt pile of mustard seeds compared to a golden mountain, or like a chickpea in comparison to a touchstone, like a jackal in comparison to a lion, or like a mosquito in comparison to Garuda. By my poor intelligence, I've clearly committed offenses to you. Such inept poetry meant to praise you is accepted by common people. But now I see you, and I am like an unsettled cow threatened by the sudden appearance of your glorious form. But I cannot defile the desired tree of your beauty even with my destructive comparisons. In this way, after seeing the Lord, the devotee profusely praises him, and the Lord reveals to the devotee endowed with all qualities of love as much as possible everything desired in relationship to the Lord's pastimes, filled with the quality of rasa. He shows his devotee, Sri Vrindavan, the desire trees, the Mahayoga pit, the most dear daughter of Brishabhanu, her associates such as Lalita and other servants. He shows the devotee his own friends such as Subal and Natchiki, the Yamuna River, the Govardhan, the forests such as Bandiravan, Nandishwagiri. And he shows his devotee all the mothers, the fathers, the brothers, the friends, and the servants there. And all the houses of Vrindavan. The Lord submerges the devotees in an enchanting tidal wave of various kinds of bliss. And then, he disappears with all his entourage. Recovering consciousness after a few moments, the devotee, anxious again to see the Lord, opens his eyes. And not seeing the Lord, he begins crying. Was I merely dreaming? No, no. I was not dreaming, because I have neither drowsiness nor any contamination in my eyes from sleep. Was it some hallucination? Some tantric witchcraft? No, because witchcraft cannot give such bliss. Or was it from some defect, some insanity of my mind? No. Because those defects bring unsteadiness of my mind, and they're completely absent. Was it the fulfillment of some material desire of mine? No. No material fancy could ever approach what I have just seen. Was it a momentary meeting with the Lord? No, because it was completely different from all previous visions of the Lord that I remember. In this way, the devotee remains in uncertainty, lying upon the dusty earth. Lying upon the dusty earth, he prays constantly for the same experience. But not obtaining it, he laments, he rolls on the ground, he weeps, he wounds his own body, he faints, he recovers, he stands, he sits, he runs about, and he wails like a madman. Sometimes he remains silent like a sage, and sometimes like a social misfit. He fails to perform his obligatory religious duties. Like a person possessed of a ghost or afflicted by an evil planet, he talks, but his words make no sense. Unto a devotee friend who comes asking privately, "What is the problem that you are having?" he explains what he has experienced. And when the friend explains to him that it was by good fortune a direct meeting with the Lord, he feels satisfied and he recovers himself and he becomes happy. But then again, he laments. How can I again gain that experience? Was it a shower of mercy by some great devotee of the Lord? Or was it the result by lucky chance, somehow, sometime, of some past honest endeavor in serving the Lord? Or perhaps it was simply the causeless mercy of the Lord upon the lowest of the low, who is filled with despicable qualities? By some indescribable fortune, I have attained the Lord. But because of grave offenses, I have lost him again. With muddled intelligence, I cannot ascertain the truth. Where shall I go? What shall I do? By what means? Who should I ask? I'm completely vacant, without soul, without shelter. I am burned by a fire in my heart. The whole world gazes upon me, ready to devour me. Giving up this worldly association, I will live in solitude for a while. Doing this, he laments further. O lotus-faced Lord, who holds a stream of nectar, who is bedecked with fragrant flower garlands which scent all the forests, attracting swarms of vibrating bees, just for a moment may I serve your lordship again. Having once tasted your sweetness, I cannot aspire for anything else. He begins to roll on the ground. He begins to breathe heavily. He faints. He loses his mind. And suddenly, he sees the Lord everywhere. He rejoices. He embraces him. He laughs. He dances. He sings. And the Lord disappears again. And he becomes filled with remorse. And he weeps and weeps and weeps. Being extraordinary in behavior, he withdraws his very life symptoms. He loses awareness of everything. He doesn't know whether he has a body or not. Then, not aware that his material body has passed to the elements, he understands only that his desired Lord, who is an ocean of mercy, has manifest himself, engaged him in service, and is leading him to his own home. Thus, the devotee reaches the goal of life. These words of Prabhupada that now we'll now hear years ago, Satchinandana Swami, he opened his treasure house and he read to me this little excerpt from one of his books, notebooks. And then just a few days ago, I was listening to a tape of Prabhupada speaking in Geneva in Switzerland in 1974, and Prabhupada spoke it, those words. Very, very short, only a few minutes. I've cut out. But listen very, very carefully. Prabhupada is going to tell us a very, very simple way that we can step forward on this mountain of Krishna consciousness, which is so high. All the sheets been distributed? Very short excerpt. So please listen. And it doesn't, we might not have captured everything from Prabhupada's words that is written here, and I'll read the remaining part. But listen to the very first thing that Prabhupada says too.
Next is a lecture. So,
wrong one.
Therefore, everyone of you should become pure devotee, first-class devotee.
You'll purify the whole place, Prabhupada says. Thank you very much, he says. And who is this for? The first thing Prabhupada said, therefore, every one of you should become pure devotee, first-class devotee. It is not hard, Prabhupada is saying. Keep the heart pure by always keeping the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra there and keeping Krishna in the heart. And you can give him what in the heart? You can give him a diamond throne and you can sit him on that diamond throne. Let us do that right now. But not exactly like that. Could you play, please? Everyone close your eyes, but first look at Giriraj. Now close your eyes. And think of your favorite Krishna. Whether it's a picture of Krishna, whether it's a deity who you've served, but take Krishna and cleanse your heart and make a nice sitting place for Krishna in your heart. A diamond throne, if you like. Some of you may like rubies and emeralds. But sit Krishna there. With any of his associates, if you so desire. It is not imagination, Prabhupada said. Make some offerings. Flowers, the most fragrant roses, gardenias, gandharaj, chameli, jui, champak, decorate. Fruits and flowers, holy water. Now place your head at Krishna's lotus feet. And remembering what ecstatic devotion is, as we have heard from the mouth of Srila Prabhupada, of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, offer a humble prayer. And in your mind's eye, that beautiful throne that's decorated, upon which is situated your lordship. Please place that on Govardhan Hill, being careful not to step on the hill yourself. Now more flowers. Let flowers of every color fall from every direction, and beautiful birds, parrots, peacocks. Friends of Krishna, and keep that in your mind, and without opening your eyes, face in the direction of Govardhan Hill, where we are just sitting at the lotus feet of. And as you so desire, gradually open your eyes and see Giriraj. Slowly, slowly. I would like to read, keep looking at Giriraj. I would like to read several verses from the Bhagavatam that describe the beauty of Krishna. Lord Brahma said, "My dear Lord, you are the only worshipful Lord. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore I offer my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you. O son of the King of the Cowherds, your transcendental body is dark blue, like a new cloud. Your garment is brilliant like lightning, and the beauty of your face is enhanced by your gunja earrings and the peacock feather on your head. Wearing garlands of various forest flowers and leaves, and equipped with a herding stick, a buffalo horn, and a flute, you stand beautifully with a morsel of food in your hand. This next verse describes what the wives of the Brahmins saw when they came running to Krishna to give the offerings of food, because they had heard that Krishna and his friends were hungry. This is what they saw. His complexion was dark blue, and his garment was golden. Wearing a peacock feather, colored minerals, flower buds, and a garland of forest flowers and leaves, he was dressed just like a dramatic dancer. He rested one hand upon the shoulder of a friend, and within the other hand he twirled a lotus flower. Lilies graced his ears, and his hair hung down over his cheeks, and his lotus-like face was smiling." This is from Vidugda Madhava. "The beauty of Krishna's eyes surpasses the beauty of white lotus flowers. His yellow garments surpass the brilliance of fresh decorations of kunkum. His ornaments of selected forest flowers subdue the hankering for the best of garments, and his bodily beauty possesses mind-attracting splendor, greater than the jewels known as emeralds. O my Lord, the transcendental body of Krishna is very sweet, and his face is even sweeter than his body, but his soft smile, which has the fragrance of honey, is sweeter still. From the other of the books that Mahaprabhu brought back in Krishna Kanamrita and quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Please take 5 minutes to write now, and then we'll have